This is a special hour of Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. Happy New Year to you. It's 2023 now, if you can believe it. Yesterday, we brought you the last of our favorite conversations from 2022. Today, it is time to look ahead. And it is harder to get by than it was at the start of last year. Inflation, cost of utilities, rising interest rates, labor shortages, hard on a household, and challenging for businesses. So, how to take stock of the year we've left behind, how will businesses handle moving forward, and in keeping with the leadership conversations we've been having on Radio Boston, what challenges will private sector leaders themselves face? And that's in companies big and small. So we decided to ask a panel of business leaders. Corey Thomas is chairman and CEO of Rapid7, which, loosely explained, does data security. Aoife Brennan, president and CEO of Synlogic, which develops new medicines. And Jen Fagel, executive director of nonprofits Commonwealth Kitchen, which works with small food businesses. Aoife, welcome.
Thank you, Tiziana. Great to be here.
Corey, thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for having me here.
And Jen, welcome back to the studio.
Thanks. Always a pleasure.
All right. So listen, in order to understand how to look ahead, we need to start with you as leaders and how you think about leadership. So Corey, how do you? What is leadership to you? What makes a good leader?
Well, I think leadership is different in different times. And so, you know, one of my lessons is always that leadership must meet the times. And we're in some very uncertain times. So I think the first rule of leadership right now is just that, how do you actually help people navigate the uncertain? How do you help people navigate things that they can't control and come together and build stuff and sort of like survive and hopefully thrive and make it through times that are not crystal clear about what's happening in the world around us?
Corey, does it feel like this is as uncertain a time as you've ever led through?
Well, not as uncertain as the pandemic. So there's some learnings that we actually have. We've had a number of years of uncertainty. But I would say that this is a surprise uncertainty in some ways, because I don't think any of us expected, if you think about the start of last year, that we would be in a, you know, inflationary, uncertain economic environment with still global conflict.
So, Jen Fagel, so much nodding from you, like the second Corey started, right? So let me turn to you next in Commonwealth Kitchen. How do you, and we've talked with you about leadership here on Radio Boston before. How are you thinking about leadership? And is the hallmark right now what Corey says? Is it uncertainty? Or for you, with the people you work with, is there something else that's sort of the defining characteristic of leadership right now?
It's such a good and complicated question. I appreciate Corey sort of that it changes over time. You know, we like to think about leadership as being, it's about an attitude, not a position. And so despite my being the executive director of my organization, there are leaders across the organization that we do at our staff level, but also the business owners we work with. And so a lot of it is really coaching people to trust your gut, take action, right? Even in uncertainty, being stuck, being paralyzed is problematic. And so we have to continue to find ways to find incremental things we can do to test rapidly to see what's working and then to continue to go in that direction. And certainly in the food industry, it's been really, really hard the last 2 years. And we are still in a lot of uncertainty as we as consumers, who's coming back, where are we coming back, where do we eat, when do we eat? Food trucks are still not a thing. And so with all that uncertainty and then on top of that, inflation and the supply chain issues, it's really challenging for our businesses to predict. And so therefore, for us, the leadership question is really saying day to day, reevaluate, day to day, reconsider, what are you thinking about? And so that sense, Corey, of, you know, how do we continue to pivot and change is really key to leadership in these days.
So, Aoife, let me let you pick up whatever thread from there is speaking to you the most.
Yeah, I think the most important attribute of a leader to me is courage. And I think courage will look differently in different times, to your point, Corey. But I think the courage to be able to recognize the data, to recognize the internal environment that you're operating in, and to be able to adjust strategy, right, in response to that. And we know from history that the businesses and the companies that do particularly well over the long haul are the ones that are agile, and they're able to follow the signs that they're seeing, either internally or externally, and to be able to adjust their strategy and their tactics to adjust to that new reality. And I think that's super important, right? We can have heads down, ignoring what we're seeing around us, and slowly drift out of business or out of relevance. And I think the most important thing is, you know, often the organization isn't with you initially in recognizing, hey, guys, things have changed. what was, you know, what we said were goals at the beginning of the year maybe are less relevant now, and we've had to change. And having that courage to be able to stand up in front of an organization or to be able to meet your investors or your board and to say, hey, we've assessed the data, you know, we think this is the way we need to move, is just so important. And I think that's absolutely, for me, what defines good leadership, no matter what time you're operating in.
I mean, I love that thought, because I think one of the things that we forget is that uncertainty brings opportunity. And so the thing our team always talks about is that this is a moment where we have an opportunity to actually serve our customers better, to actually become stronger, become healthier. And if you can take a moment to look at sort of like what's happening around you and adjust to it, it is an opportunity. And that sometimes gets lost. So I just love that notion.
I agree 100%. And sometimes initially it can feel uncomfortable, right? Because there's this tendency in all of us to try and ignore and zoom out the uncertainty and just to kind of keep your head down and ignore the signs. But stepping forward to means, you know, the sooner you step forward, the sooner you adjust and pivot, the more opportunity you're going to be able to build for your business.
Yeah, I think that the challenge in all of that is getting clarity, right? It's very hard in this moment, especially when there's this proliferation of opportunity as the world is changing, is how do you have that clarity of the vision of what you're trying to do? We, as we're doing strategic planning in our organization, we talk about what is your wildly important goal and how are you focused in on that goal as your North Star? Because otherwise, everything else can just be a distraction. And so it's really key to try to trust your gut. I feel like I say that to the businesses we work with all the time.
We're speaking about the private sector heading into 2023, leadership requirements of businesses big and small, the leaders who run them. We have here Jen Fagel of Commonwealth Kitchen, Aoife Brennan of Synlogic, and Corey Thomas, who's the CEO of Rapid7. We've been talking about pivoting, uncertainty, opportunity, courage. It makes me think of a conversation. We did a series of leadership conversations. One of the people we spoke with is Reverend Willie Bodrick II, who is at 12th Baptist Church. And he was talking about the courage to break with tradition when it's necessary. And I want to play a little bit of that.
Leadership starts with love. Then it also ends in learning. But between the love and the learning, you got to be able to listen. I've listened, and I think because I've listened and I've loved and I've learned from people, when there have been moments where I've had to make decisions that break from tradition, that may be controversial, that may be different, people know where I am coming from.
One of the things that was compelling about the putting the three of you together is different venues and formats. I've spoken with all of you about your leadership. And Corey, I'll turn to you first. Each of you has talked about what you give of yourselves as leaders, especially in times of pivot or uncertainty. And I feel like that's what Reverend Bodrick was talking about there. And there's this smile on your face that makes me want to come to you first coming out of that.
Well, what I loved about it was that sort of that listening that leads to the learning piece. I think sometimes as leaders, the temptation is to have the answer. And people expect you to have the answer. And I think part of the vulnerability is to say, I don't have all the answers, but we're going to figure it out together and still have the confidence and the clarity that you actually meant to actually listen, because that's how you go through things together. And part of, I think, that what makes great organizations and great teams is they grow through uncertain and difficult times together because they are listening to one another. They are listening and paying attention to the data from the outside world. And that is sort of the opportunity to grow together versus to grow apart.
You know, Aoife, that at one level sounds easy. And at another, you know, I've run a large organization before. Sitting still and listening, especially when it's almost easier to say, oh, no, I got this, right, is hard.
Yes, it's very difficult. And it's also very difficult to admit that you don't have all of the answers as a leader. You know, there's kind of this tendency, particularly when there's all this external uncertainty, for everybody wants to hear your leader say everything's going to be okay. It's all going to be okay. Everything's going to be great. Like, it's a straight line up and to the right, and it's all growth from here, and next year is going to be phenomenal, and everything's going to be awesome. And to be a really good leader, you have to not fall into that trap, but to kind of reflect and be real. But there's going to be challenges.
Can you give me an example of when you've had to do that?
We don't know what they are. We, you know, I work in a high-risk business where we're inventing new medicines, and that's associated with a lot of failure. And we often have to look at our internal data and say, this program doesn't have the data to move forward. You know, we're discontinuing this program in that moment. It's very challenging for individuals who've spent time working on it, and they want you to guarantee that they're going to have a job, the next program is going to work. And in that moment, you can't give in to the temptation of, you know, I will guarantee that it's all going to be okay. But you have to build that resilience in the organization by saying, no, it's, you know, we have values. We're going to work this out. We know what we're doing. Here's our North Star. Is it going to be easy? No, but that's why we come to work every day. You know, we're doing this to help patients who currently have no treatment options. And it's going to be tough. And there are going to be setbacks. And there are going to be other things like a global pandemic or, you know, war in Ukraine. And we just don't know what they are. But what we do know is that if we keep focused on our North Star, we can work together as a team to get through whatever those challenges may be. And that's more challenging as to put yourself out there of not having all of the answers as a leader. But I think it's so critical because, you know, just authenticity is so important. And you can show up once with the everything's going to be awesome, everything's going to be okay message. But when that doesn't transpire, it just becomes really challenging to maintain your leadership through difficult times. And I think that's one of the most difficult things as a leader, to be able to balance optimism with realism that there are challenges and we're living in challenging times, and to still maintain, you know, everybody focused on that long-term goal is just, I think, one of the most challenging things of being a leader right now.
But I think that also raises this thing about understanding the North Star. Because if you really understand kind of the direction that you're going and you're very clear about it, you can start to separate out the things that are less important. And the other thing that I, as a leader, try to think about, I'm a very visual thinker. And so when I think about the work we're doing, the visual for me is kind of the train going up the tracks. And my job is not to be in the front of that train, it's to be in the back of that train. Because that way I can see what's going on in front of me. I can see who's doing what and where. And really important for me is where are the patterns we're seeing in terms of direction. Because that to me tells me if I'm hearing it from multiple businesses, I'm hearing it from my staff, if I'm hearing it from funders, whatever it is, then that's giving me a sense that my gut is right and we're going in that right direction. But important to get that kind of feedback loop as you're trying to figure out strategy.
So tell me a time, Jen, this last year or the last couple of years where you were at the back of the train and looking and you went, uh-oh, and had to change course.
So certainly the pandemic for Commonwealth Kitchen was all about changing course. You know, we are a shared kitchen. So in a pandemic, you don't want lots of people sharing a kitchen and making food together. It's the worst possible model. And so we literally had to close down the shared kitchen, tell businesses that this was their livelihood, to go home, which was not easy, and go from being cheerleaders and advocates for our business owners to being coaches and business advisors to tell them to do the hard thing. And then we had to look at ourselves and figure out, well, what's going on? The community that we care about is these businesses and their workers. They are struggling right now around food security. What is it we can do? And we know that we have a specific skill set. So where is that core competency that we can use that can actually meet this need if our North Star is this community? And so in that case, that was really looking at switching to doing emergency feeding, something completely different than we as an organization had ever done before, but really important from the community that we were trying to serve, that North Star of direction, and how we were leaning in by paying our businesses to feed neighbors. So that was our way of keeping businesses going. That was an absolute complete pivot from what we had traditionally done. And now the challenge has been trying to go away from that work back to what our core work is, and still holding the reality that people are still in pain, people are still suffering, that need is still there. We can't totally give it up. At the same time, our core work is helping build and scale food companies. So that balancing act at the moment is definitely creating some friction within the organization about how do you prioritize so many things at once.
So, Corey, as you listen to the stories that Aoife and Jen just told, I got to believe there's one from your own experience playing in your
life. Yeah. I'm just thinking about, you talk about holding balance. I think about holding the tension is, you know, if you think about that true north that we just talked about and being decisive and aligning, you know, one of the things we had to really focus on in the last year at Rapid7 was how do we make sure that we actually narrow the focus down to the things that really, really matter? And that involved listening, but it also involved some decisiveness about, like, here are our customer priorities. Here's the things that we're going to do. Here are the things that we heard, but we're not going to do. And not all of those are popular, And sometimes people say, well, you said you were going to listen. And listening does not always mean that we actually do everything that everyone wants to do. Mm-hmm. And you have to navigate that from a sense of trust. But that actually takes work, time, and effort. So I think about that tension between sort of like listening, engaging, but also sort of being very, very hyper-focused. And I think that matters incredibly in times like this.
So, Eva, what is your personal North Star as a leader?
So I'm a physician by training. I got into this industry because I had direct experience dealing with patients and families who were given a life-changing diagnosis and had to tell them, well, there are no treatments for your disease or your condition. And that, to me, just really stimulated me to get into drug development, to go through it. It wasn't, you know, my first job was a company that went out of business within, you know, a couple of years of joining. So I completely understand the challenges. But I've had some success as well, and been able to see something you worked on kind of in early science get all the way through to being an approved medicine that's being used by thousands of patients around the world is just such a high. And it's just such a driver of everything that we do. And, you know, 90% of products that move from the lab into the clinic fail. But when they do succeed, it's an amazingly rewarding experience to have to be part of that and to be part of the team that makes that happen. And explaining to, you know, a relatively young organization of what that feels like and how important that is, it's just such an important part of kind of my job as a leader. We do things like bring patients into the company to explain what their lived experience is like dealing with the disease. We're developing drugs for a lot of rare diseases, so often these impact children. So having parents come in and explain the impact that this disease has on their kids is just incredibly motivating. So I'm very fortunate in that I'm working in this very high need area with a very kind of feel-good, strong mission and a very strong North Star that we've really built from the very early days of the company, this kind of focus on why are we doing it? We're doing it for the patients. They're waiting. There's something that we can do that can really help and make a big difference to their lives. And that really helps at times like this, I think, to have that kind of ingrained good times and bad. And to make sure that everybody understands when you make a decision, particularly a big decision that's unpopular, was, you know, we heard you, we heard the feedback, but we went back to our values, we went back to our North Star, and we had to prioritize X over Y. And this is why ultimately we've had to make this move. And so I think it's been very helpful, particularly during times of change, to have that kind of direction and focus.
And Corey, what's your personal North Star as a leader?
I'm obsessed with making organizations work well for like people in societies. And so whether that's through cybersecurity or whether that's through the experience I've had in data and technology, to me, it's all about how do you actually have organizations that people trust and that they can work together to solve societal problems. You know, I think one of the bad raps about capitalism is that it's not clear that it's always solving societal problems. But to the extent that we can actually have that serve societal problems, I think people are generally on board. So, you know, my focus has always been how you use technology to help organizations better serve the biggest problems in society.
And Jen, how about you, your personal North Star?
Yeah, so I just first want to say, but Corey, you also represent in everything that you do beyond the business that you have, right? You are a leader in community and other places, and so you take that with you. And so to me, when I think about what your personal North Star is for me, I think about it both from what am I doing in my organization daily, but also what is the legacy the organization is leading? And for me, it's the personal part of, as we say at Commonwealth Kitchen, food is our passion, but equity is our mission. And so that is that North Star, the equity North Star. And as a kid who grew up with a single parent household, like money in the pocket, money in the household was very important in my family life. When I moved into doing real estate development, which was a lot of my career, doing affordable housing development, recognized that while really important for stabilizing neighborhoods, affordable housing was actually not moving people out of poverty, and that having safety nets, having cash in your pocket, having family with resources was what did that. And I had family that had that. And so understanding the work that we do now as a way to create real meaningful opportunity for people to actually build wealth and build safety nets, to me, that is the North Star for our organization and for me personally.
All right, Jen Fagel, Commonwealth Kitchen, Eva Brennan, Synlogic, Corey Thomas, Rapid7. Sit tight. We are going to continue the conversation we're having as we enter into 2023 with business leaders. What are the challenges? What's the leadership call? What will the new year require of companies, their employees, and their leadership. I'm Tiziana Dearing. You are listening to Radio Boston. We are talking with business leaders about the challenges of leading today and what the new year could bring. Still with us, Aoife Brennan, president and CEO of Synlogic, which works on new medicine development. Corey Thomas, chairman and CEO of Rapid7, which works on cybersecurity. And Jen Fagel, executive director of Commonwealth Kitchen, which works with small food entrepreneurs. Thanks to the three of you for staying with us. We've been talking about your belief as leaders, your North Star, what the challenges of leadership are. I want to bring some focus to 2022. And there was a lot of stuff like this.
In just 1 month, grocery prices rose 1%. For the year, they're up 7.4%. Gas is up 40%. And used cars rose 40.5%.
We are feeling the inflation that the Fed is trying to control, and we're seeing it every single day.
Those prices have at least doubled.
Grocery store owner Chris Wallers checking the chicken prices that have gone sky high.
It's the hardest it's ever been to be in business with every cost going up.
Sound there from WCVB in late February and then WBZ-TV in July. Corey, how was 2022 for you?
Oh, 2022 was nothing like I expected it to actually be. I mean, inflation, which has a big impact on inequality, which is a challenge. We're all wondering about like a global recession in 2023, and we still pretend like the pandemic doesn't exist. And we're trying to do all of that by figuring out, like, how are we going to actually, you know, work as a society together and work as organizations. It was much more painful than I expected.
And what was the biggest pain? You're laughing, thank God. What was the biggest pain point for you, Corey?
Well, the biggest pain point was actually going from the emotional, I would say, high, thinking, oh, the pandemic's behind us, to the very rough start of the year with the COVID. And then a very unexpected economic situation. Like, we forgot about Omicron, but, like, you know, I entered this year thinking that, like, okay, we have this behind us, so we can start moving forward. And it turned out not only was COVID not behind us, it turned out there was this big economic tsunami around inflation that was going to hit.
So, Jen, at the beginning of the year, was there a moment where you were like, oh, this is not going to play out the way I thought?
Yeah, that's been going on since 2020 because we're in the food industry, right, which has been hard hit like the entire time. And so just when you think, and especially when you're working with largely under-resourced, under-capitalized food businesses in this economy, man, has this been a challenge. And so trying to figure out what equitable economic recovery looks like has been for us really trying to focus initially on, well, how do we find where are people eating? How do we find sales opportunities? How do we get buyers for these businesses? Because like a food truck, there is not a market for food trucks right now in downtown Boston. As much as Mayor Wu would love to see more people coming downtown, businesses like the ones we work with, they cannot afford to be downtown and just hope people show up. And so a fair amount of our work for the entire year and actually for the entire 3 years, I feel like has just been trying to educate everybody, educate the business owners on what are the things they can take and should take, where risk actually makes sense for the kind of businesses we work with, trying to go to buyers and us as consumers to educate them about why when you work with one of the delivery companies to get your food delivered, for example, that actually removes a lot of the cash from the business owners and they're cash strapped. When you use food trucks, how to use them, and then finding ways where we can try to find ways to create predictability. So in a world where there's been almost none, what can you do? And so an example of that is, you know, we did holiday gift boxes this year that we sold. We sold 2,600 of them.
Wait, what were a couple of things in them?
So everything from a company called Gria that is bringing in cashews from farms in West Africa, from connected to families of his, and he is then roasting and flavoring them, and so that's Gria Foods. Another one is Mr. Tamal, which is a mother and son from Mexico, and they do different kinds of mole and salsas. So just an amazing mix of business owners, all women, immigrants, people of color owned. And so 12 businesses were part of these boxes. And so for a single business, that 2,600 boxes sold is the equivalent of one farmer's market for an entire summer. That's the amount of sales that we were able to do for them. So enormously powerful for us to provide that access for our businesses, for those businesses to have a guaranteed sale and not just show up and hope something's going to happen. But a lot of work for us as an organization to take that on, right? There's no insignificant amount of work. And then needing to find values-aligned partners that say, we get it, we understand why.
So, Aoife, Corey, you wanted to say something. So, Aoife Brennan, I'll turn to you. You know, you were talking earlier in the conversation about having the courage to say, I don't know, right, about being honest. You can't always just be hunky-dory and rosy. As a leader, everybody who's ever experienced leadership has had a moment, probably in any given year, where they kind of go into the closet and close the door for a minute and go, oh. Right. Did 2022 present you with any of those moments at Synlogic?
Yeah, just it feels like we've had a lifetime of challenges all in a 12-month period. and what, you know, I think the COVID was a very challenging time, right, socially, and it was a very challenging time. But in drug development, there were actually some really good silver linings of COVID. Suddenly, everyone appreciated kind of what drug developers do, right? Everyone was aware. Moderna, Pfizer became household names. My mom in Ireland was following the progress of the clinical trials. You know, so it, while it was very challenging for all of us personally adapting to this new way of life, it was actually kind of a nice time to be in drug development, to be in science. There was a lot of appreciation for how drug developers can solve societal problems. So while it was, you know, we had to adjust how we work, there was also this kind of warm glow of working in my industry during the COVID pandemic. And then at the beginning of 22, we had this, you know, persistent inflation. It wasn't just temporary. It wasn't going away. That has a knock-on effect of requiring interest rates to go up. And for science-based companies who don't necessarily have revenue where, you know, you're kind of hope and dreams, you know, we hope to one day have a treatment that can help all of these patients, but there's science and risk involved until we get there. That presents incredible challenges in terms of access to capital. Because we're essentially spending investors' money until we develop and successfully commercialize a product.
And just for perspective, how long might it be that you're spending investors' money before the product comes to market?
Well, the average drug development is about 10 years, right, from that initial discovery. So it's a long period of time. And in a scenario where interest rates are low, capital is flowing, you know, people believe that if we develop medicines that patients need that really help change their lives, the rewards will come. And now we have this scenario where there's a very high interest rate. Those future revenues are further kind of reduced by this kind of interest rate situation, by our cost of capital has gone up. Then you put in the risk that's involved in investing in an early phase company. And we've seen investors move away from investing in, you know, risky but high reward biotech companies to companies that have more certainty, have a revenue stream, or are very close to commercialization.
So this costs too much. I need more of a sure thing.
Yes, exactly. It's kind of this risk off kind of mentality, right? Which you've seen a lot of kind of small biotechs, the indices that track performance of companies like mine have just had a really, really challenging year. And investors who invest solely in pre-commercial biotechs have had a very challenging year in terms of, you know, losses that they've made on investments they've made previously in companies. And that's incredibly challenging because what it's meant is that we really have to assess what we're focused on. You know, can we afford to do all of these programs? Can we continue to do the things that may be nice to have? So how do we really get to the core essence of what we're doing? Focus on fewer projects and really make sure that we're being very, very diligent about spending money to push out the length of time that our current cash can last us so that the science matures more.
But that means you might have to leave behind a medicine that could actually help someone.
Exactly. And that's very challenging. And, you know, that culminated in November with us making a decision that we would have to reduce and shrink our workforce, which is one of the most challenging decisions I think a leader has to make. Because we have individuals who did a great job, who helped us get where we are today. But in a scenario where you're working on fewer projects, you kind of look across your employee base and you kind of start to question, you know, that's our biggest cost is essentially our salary, our payroll. And that was that moment where, you know, I was, please take this away from me, take this off my shoulders. And it was a very, very challenging time for us, a very challenging decision that needed to be made. You know, I think the organization is stronger and more agile, you know, on the back of it. But it was certainly one of those moments I'll remember for the rest of my career of having that, like, is there any other alternative to this step we have to make? And realizing, no, there's not. You just have to have the courage to try and do it in the right way, be as transparent as possible, you know, and really show respect and dignity to those individuals who are moving on from the organization. So that was a very challenging and probably a low point for me in 22. Yeah.
Corey, did you have a moment like that in 22?
I did. And, you know, the thing I just have to say, I was just thinking about what you were actually saying. I didn't have to go through that in 22. I have had to go through that before. And you know, theoretically, that you have to make the decision for the greatest number of people and for your customers, and you're putting it all in there. But it's still painful for those people that you actually have to, that don't get to continue the journey. So I know how painful that actually is. For me, it actually happened earlier in the year because we were going through all these changes. And then for us, the Russia-Ukraine in the cybersecurity world means that we have a bunch of our, and plus there was this big vulnerability, Log4j, that happened at the end of last year. So for the first 6 months of the year, we essentially had to have our teams be hyper-vigilant as we're trying to go through all of these things. And that just sets up a dynamic of exhaustion.
So wait, I want to understand this, especially for our listeners. What about Russia and Ukraine drove your cybersecurity, your teams needing to be more hyper-vigilant?
So, you know, we run for thousands of companies around the world. We don't just provide the technology that allows them to monitor their environments for attacks. Us and our partners also monitor their networks for attacks, including in Europe, including for some large organizations. And when the threat environment escalates, which you are, you know, definitely at a higher escalation levels, as sort of cyber attacks were expected to actually rise, that means you have to be more vigilant.
Got it.
And so staying at a higher readiness level takes a toll on the organization. And as we were going through, how do you actually deal with sort of like genuine issues of burnout and other things while you actually have to keep your performance high for your customers? That is definitely one of those painful things that, like, you know, I just felt like, I'm like, I can understand people exhausted and tired, and I can understand our customers sort of like saying, hey, we need more from you. And that was not a fun sort of like dynamic to try to have to navigate.
So what'd you do?
So at the time, we expanded our employee base, but slower. So this is one of the rubs, because the answer before in 2019 in a normal market would have been just go hire more people. But facing inflation and knowing that I didn't want to have to set up for a layoff going forward, I had to actually sort of like hire at a slower pace, cut projects that were on the periphery, and refocus on our main line. How do we actually focus on the security operations, which is protecting our customers from cyber attacks? And that involves sort of like cutting some things that were near and dear to some of our employees' hearts and really refocusing in, but not going out and hiring the larger workforce that I want to hire, because I didn't want to risk laying them off later.
So, Jen Fagel, as I'm listening to Aoife and I'm listening to Corey tell these stories from 2022, I have that mental image, almost maybe like a cartoon where somebody's plugging along and then something comes out of left field and just boing and knocks them right off course. Mm-hmm. What knocked you off course in 20? We know what knocked food off course, right? We know what knocked food businesses off course, COVID. But was there anything else that knocked you off course in 22 that either left a bruise or you're like, where did that come from?
How long you got? That's a long list. But I guess the thing, as I'm listening to the other panelists, the thing that comes to me is this idea that sometimes you got to go slow to go fast. And so certainly 2022 for us was internally was a lot of, well, pre-2022, we had a lot of staff turnover because we, like a lot of people, had the burnout issue of, oh my goodness, we are working in a really challenging moment. And so in 2022, finding people who wanted to come and work for an organization like ours and do the kind of crazy moment we're in terms of what economic recovery looks like was also really hard. So it took us way longer. I think I got smarter to say I'm going to wait for the right person rather than a good person. And so that also took longer. So that put a lot more stress on everybody. And also meant that now we got to fix culture, right? Because you bring in a whole bunch of new people and guess what? It changes the organizational culture and there's a lot to do. and to get people acculturated and settled and connected and empowered and all of those other things and the why of what we do, not just what we do, was really important that we said certain things that I really wanted us to do, I had to say, nope, we can't do it. Events we wanted to do, you know, annual reports, whatever it was. So those things really got in the way. At the same time, we had this incredible opportunity to do a big food show that we did in June that was not on our work plan in January. So all of a sudden, you got to all at the same time, we're slow on staff. We have to think about, well, here's this opportunity that is our North Star because our businesses need access to capital. They need access to business opportunities. This would give them that. So if we run this food show, which we did in June, we had 100 businesses that were there under a tent in the Seaport. We had over 400 buyers show up for this event, which was shocking even to us that we could get that many people, another 800 from the public. This was a game changer for our businesses. Honestly, when I looked at the staff at the end of that food show, I thought they were all going to collapse from the level of stress and energy it was. And that, again, required us to think about slow it down, get back to basics, figure out what are we doing, make sure we're doing exceptional work before we think about what comes next.
All right. On the count of three, I'm going to ask each of you on a scale of 1 to 5, 1 being not bad, 5 being holy God. I'm going to ask you to say at once how hard hiring is right now. Ready? 1, 2, 3.
5.
Yeah, 5.
Yeah, 5.
All right. With that in mind, we'll be back in a moment. Corey Thomas, Aoife Brennan, Jen Fagel, stay with us. I'm Tiziana Deering. You are listening to Radio Boston. We've got a special show we're in the middle of today where we're looking at the economy and companies and the challenges for the coming year, the challenges for leaders and the businesses they run. Still with us, Jen Fagel, Executive Director of Commonwealth Kitchen, which works with small food businesses, Corey Thomas, Chairman and CEO of Rapid7, which works in cybersecurity, and Aoife Brennan, President and CEO of Synlogic, which does new medicine development. Now, we took a quick rest in our conversation there, or I intended to. I had just asked you to all rate how hard it is to hire. You all said fives. The mics turn off, and you all went blah 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 blah. So let's pick up there because the point now is to talk about 2023. So hiring is a big thing for 23 for businesses, Corey.
Well, I mean, at least for us, and I think this is broadly true in the tech sector. It is targeted hiring at a slower pace. Mm-hmm. I think the thing that we have to adjust to is that there was lots of innovation that could happen in a zero interest rate environment. This goes to part of the discussion earlier about drug development. And, you know, it's a zero interest rate environment. And one of the adjustments is probably going to be a while before we actually see that again. And so now we're focusing, at least at Rapid7, but also many other tech companies, at more targeted hiring. We're going to be growing. We're going to be expanding. But it is growth.
Because it costs too much money? Costs too much to borrow now to get the capital you need? Is that what you mean?
No, I would just say that the... You know, if you think about lots of invest, because this is about investors and sort of like what do they do with the money, is if the alternative capital that return that they can actually get is higher somewhere else, it makes it less likely that they do riskier things.
Got it.
And much of the tech economy is a riskier thing. And so it's less of the investment that goes there. That said, you know, we are a public company that is profitable. So it's a little bit easier for us. So we're going to be growing and expanding. But I would say less people adds in 23 than we've actually had the last several years because it's very targeted and very focused on the most critical areas. And to the question before the break, it is easier to hire people today. We are seeing employees stay around longer. The thing that we're really focused in on is hiring at quality and really focusing on culture because I think these are the environments where, at least for me and my leadership team, we have to spend more time nurturing the culture of the organization about what it actually means to actually be part of the team and deliver great service.
So, Aoife, is culture going to be a challenge for Synlogic in 2023 as well, or is it something else?
Absolutely. I think the other wrinkle to add on to what Corey, you know, I thought earlier on, well, we're not going to have that much in common. But actually, now that I hear you speak, I'm like, wow, you know, I could be sitting in your seat, you could be sitting in mine, because there's just so many parallels, right? Just in terms of the innovation and what, you know, a high interest rate environment means in terms of how you run your business. So we've been focusing, you know, up to now, we've been doing a lot of lab basic science work. And we had some positive clinical trial readouts in the last 6 months. Now we need to focus on developing those products further. So that means we're, you know, maybe hiring more people who do the clinical trials, get the products to patients rather than the lab scientists. And we're also seeing this kind of shift in terms of expectations around remote work. And individuals want to work a hybrid schedule, want to work remotely. And one of the most challenging things for science-based businesses like ours is we want to keep that science base, You know, the people who are scientists in the lab are in person. You know, you can't do lab science from home. And then you have the product developers, people who are kind of saying, well, you know, I can do my job from home, so I'd like to be a remote employee. And how do you keep with a relatively small team that kind of unified culture, sense of purpose of having people co-located for at least part of the week while, you know, being able to be an attractive place of employment for the individuals who want to work remotely or hybrid? And it's this huge social experiment, I feel, that's going on right now in terms of how that impacts culture, how companies can navigate this kind of scenario where some of the employee base, by, you know, nature of their work, have to come in. And others have the option of working from home. And I think it's just multi-layered. But at a company level, I think the impact that has on culture and how you kind of get that sense of belonging and ownership within every employee is just a really critical challenge for my executive team right now of how do we build that culture? How do we evolve our culture to be inclusive of those kind of who have a desire to work predominantly remotely, but also kind of honor our scientific heritage and provenance of, you know, we're kind of focused around the lab. You know, the lab is where the science and the innovation happens. And I think it's just a real challenge for many businesses in 23.
Jen, so much nodding.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. So we have the exact same challenge, both internal for our own organization. We run a kitchen. I have staff that have to be in the kitchen no matter what. We make food for a variety of organizations. Our staff have to be there, but plenty of other people like me do not. And so how do you build that right culture within our staff? And then add to that for us, you know, we really work hard with the businesses that are in our network to really create peer learning opportunities for them. And so much of that happens literally like in the hallway in the kitchen. What was that great opportunity you had? How did you figure out how to price your product? How did you negotiate what you were doing? And the business owners having all that informal connection, having lost that in the last couple of years, is we can see it in the growth of the businesses and their ability to scale, their ability to be resilient. And so a big question we have is exactly that, which is, how do we encourage people to come back in and feel safe? We still have a mask requirement in our kitchen because there's so many people that come in and out of the building. And better off to keep people safe than not. Not the easiest way to build connection and relationships. And so we are continuing to struggle with this question, exact question of what do you do to recreate all of that informal connections that people have, which is so important to learning, culture, connection, relationships, and ultimately how leadership works.
So I used to teach a leadership course when I was on faculty at Boston College, and there was one guest I used to often bring in, Corey, who always talked about the importance of being able to look around the corner. And if you couldn't do it yourself, then find somebody who can mentor you who could look around the corner. So I'm going to ask you each this question, and Corey, I'll start with you. When you look around the corner in your industry or in our broader society as we enter 2023, what are you seeing that you're paying most attention to?
I'm paying a deep attention to how organizations are reorganizing themselves to this whole point. It impacts sort of like how we support our customers. Because look, we sell business to business.
So your business delivers services to other businesses.
To other businesses. And all of our customers are going through similar dynamics. So, you know, it was painful the last couple of years as their turnover rates escalated, what was happening. So, you know, the big thing that we're paying attention to is what's happening in society on a state-by-state, country-by-country basis, because that's sort of how we support our customers and engage them. Very different dynamics in Europe with their energy crisis than in the U.S., than in Asia. We're paying a lot of attention to basically what's the turnover in the industries and the customers that we actually support. And we're paying a lot of attention to what's actually happening in the economy. The thing that I would expect the most is that we're preparing for essentially, you know, inflation to hopefully be tamed, but at the cost of a mild recession. And so we said, listen, if big chunks of our customers are undergoing economic distress, how do we want to show up for them? And that's the question that I put to all of our teams. It's just like, if we have a large segment of our customers that are under duress, how do we show up for them so that we're proud of ourselves later? And to our leadership team, I say, if we're going through a hard period, how do we actually show up as a team for our employees, but also how do we show up together? Mm-hmm. And that's really the way that we're thinking about how do we actually show up in times that may be harder than we might like.
We're talking with Corey Thomas, Aoife Brennan, and Jen Fagel about challenges in the private sector and for business leaders in 2023. Aoife, same question to you. Briefly, you look around the corner. What do you got your eye on?
So what's really important for us this year is execution of our clinical trials. And I think, you know, what happens, this kind of idea of everything being more home-centric, whether it be for employees, for physicians, for patients, and how this idea of, you know, the trial coming to you is really going to impact. And it's kind of a subset of this broader societal thing, you know, about how long are the things that we've adopted during the pandemic, is it a transient thing, just like we're hoping inflation will be? Or is it, are we going to see this kind of permanent shift to people wanting to work from home, patients wanting to, you know, the trial to come to them? I don't want to go to my physician's office to participate in this trial. I want you to send a nurse out to my home, which is this kind of movement of, you know, decentralized clinical trials. And it's kind of all the same flavor when you boil it down. You know, it's kind of, what are the things that are going to be durable, and what are the things that are going to kind of be a transient blip that relates to kind of overhang from the pandemic, and we're all going to go back to the way we were operating in 2019. And I think it's just a really interesting thing to watch as a business owner, and it's a really interesting, or as a business leader, and it's a really interesting thing to kind of observe, well, how's that going to impact the kind of what's coming around the corner for me and our future as a company? And I think it's going to be a fascinating social experiment, I think, to observe this kind of post-pandemic recovery, post-pandemic years. So I'm looking forward to learning more and seeing what happens.
Well,
I was going to say, I think the question is, what is it that's temporary and what is it that's permanent, right? So as we look at our work, you know, some of it is there is this kind of reimagining of what food industry is going to look like. We're seeing it in some places, whether that's like the robots that are in the restaurants now, or how delivery apps are working and how does that change things. We as consumers, right, more stuff is being delivered to our homes, similar to what you're saying about the drug side of it. And so is that permanent? Is it not? What does that mean for the businesses we work with? So that's a lot of question. At the same time, we find ourselves in this kind of unprecedented amount of opportunity, which is really interesting. And it's really coming out of COVID, the racial reckoning, what are we thinking about? And so opportunities, whether that be on college campuses, whether that be with private developers that are all looking to have more of an impact by working with an organization like ours. And so are they all co-equal? Do we do them all? Is it all going to be the best opportunity, right? So there's a lot of questions in there. And then on the flip side of that, when we think about growth in the nonprofit sector, we have to think about, well, who's paying for that? And, you know, where are those resources coming from? And already hearing from some of the funders out there, yeah, racial justice, that was last year.
Yeah.
So this is, right. So this is really disturbing to say, wait, we've solved this already? What are we talking about? And so for us, there is this kind of imperative of the moment to say, wait a minute, if the doors are open, this is our chance to not just have it be cracked, but to actually bust it wide open.
So, Corey, we have 30 seconds, and you put your finger up because you want to build on that. So it's you.
Yeah, because, you know, this is where leadership really matters. Because it's easy to talk about what's in the news cycle all the time, but leadership matters in the day-to-day showing up around, like, what's the organization's values and what do we value? So whether it's sort of like racial justice, equality, connections to community, I think this is one of the big tests of leaders, is that what do you actually do when no one's looking or when the times are hard, or what stuff do you actually give up? And, you know, for our organization, we said we're still going to prioritize. We just had a meeting at the end of December that says we're still going to prioritize the things that were about community engagement. But, you know, there was a discussion about, should we do that with other stuff going on?
Thank you. So on that note, we're going to wrap it. Although I'm not going to lie, if we could do another 3 hours, I would sit here and talk with you for another 3 hours. That was Corey Thomas, we heard last, chairman and CEO of Rapid7. Also with us, Jen Fagel, executive director of Commonwealth Kitchen, and Aoife Brennan, president and CEO of Synlogic. Thank you to all three of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And that's our show for today. Radio Boston is a production of 90.9 WBUR. I'm Tiziana Deering. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.